This is the Main Money Show with Craig Dixon of the Investment Executives Capital Advisory Group. Join Craig as he addresses your financial concerns and provides helpful solutions to put you on the path to achieving your financial goals. And now, here is Craig Dixon of the Main Money Show.
Good morning and welcome back to the Main Money Show. My name is Craig Dixon from Investment Executives Capital Advisory Group. If you'd like more information about what you're going to hear on our show today, give us a call at 855-625-3736, or you can visit us online at theinvestmentexecutives.org. So today, we are going to be talking about retirement planning for women. Like many people, you might wonder, well, why just women, Craig? Come on. Don't men and women have mostly the same retirement planning needs? And my answer to that is, well, sort of, but not really. But today's show is not just for women. It's also for men who want to make sure that their spouse is taken care of if they die first. Here we go again, Mark. Dying first. Talking about death right off the bat, which, as you know, is statistically likely. But before we get into all of that, let me introduce my famous co-host, Mr. MarkTurcotte.com.
Well, thank you very much, Craig. And thanks for reminding me that I'll most likely die before my spouse.
Hey, that's how I roll.
It's a cheerful way to start this off. Seriously, though, this is such an important topic, and I'm glad we're discussing it today. I know many people about our age have seen their mothers or grandmothers face retirement challenges that are unique to women.
Yes, sir. Let's just begin today by, well, discussing the obvious thing that you just alluded to. Women do live longer than men. And in fact, according to the Center for Disease Control, the difference has recently increased to almost 6 years. So women's life expectancy is now just over 79 years, and men are right about 73 and a half. So obviously that has some major implications for women's retirement income needs when their spouse passes away before them, or if their spouse passes away before them. But they'll need their money to last longer, but they'll also need to consider the impact of going from two Social Security benefits down to just one, and potentially losing a pension income if the deceased spouse had one of those. And if their spouse was lucky enough to have a pension, that's great. But if they didn't select the right option and they took maybe 100% zero, then the surviving spouse would get nothing. So there's some really important planning to do there as well if you do have a pension. Plus, you know, the longer a person lives, the more likely it is that they'll encounter additional healthcare needs, including the possibility of long-term care. And that can have obviously huge impact on finances.
Absolutely true. And as people live longer, I think so many of us have experienced firsthand through our parents or grandparents the financial complexities that come with funding long-term care.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not saying that a longer life is a bad thing, of course, just that it requires some additional planning in terms of income. And there are several other factors that women need to consider that aren't issues for men, I guess. And according to a recent article from Morgan Stanley, Retirement Planning, Why the Stakes Are Higher for Women, women also tend to have less money saved for retirement. And it's not because of their spending habits or anything like that. There's a few reasons for this. And the first reason is the long persisting wage gap. If it seems like we've been talking about this for years, it's because, well, we have. And women still make about 83 cents on the dollar compared to men. Plus, men dominate in most of the high-paying professions. Less earnings translate into less of it, less ability to save for retirement. So, and then the second reason women have less save for retirement, according to the article, is because women are more likely to experience career interruptions. And I think we all know what that is. They're more likely to take time off to care for children or their parents. They're more of the caretakers, the more sympathetic, I guess you would say, and that impacts both their lifetime earnings and can also slow down their career progression.
That makes sense from a financial perspective, although it seems a bit unfair, but I know that a person's Social Security benefit is based on their 35 highest earning years. So a few years working part-time or not working can have a huge impact.
Yeah, and that's a big obstacle. Exactly right. And now there's one more difference I want to talk about, and it surprised me enough that I went in and did some additional research on it.
Okay, now I'm curious.
You are?
What is it?
I can't tell you. Well, just a few years ago, Fidelity conducted what it called the Women and Investing Study. It reinforced findings from earlier research, which is that while women are often the CFO of a household and handle all the day-to-day finances, paying bills, et cetera, they still report that they are much less confident when it comes to investing.
Well, why is that?
Well, Mark, I'm glad you asked. I guess to some extent it makes sense because research also shows that women know less about investing than men. So it seems that a lower level of confidence makes sense. And that's not a broad statement. Obviously, you know, there are women that do very well in finance and investing and they know their stuff. But generally speaking, that's kind of what they're looking at. Here's what seems even more interesting. Despite the lack of confidence and lower level of knowledge, when women do invest, they tend to outperform men.
So men are more confident, but women actually do better.
Yeah, kind of like everything in real life.
That checks out.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that you're right on there for everything. We could just say this is about everything in life instead of just finances. But several different studies have come up to the same conclusion. But the question is why? And there's multiple theories. Maybe less confidence makes women more willing to take advice from an expert. That's could be a good reason. Maybe it's because women take a more conservative approach, while men are much more likely to want to jump on that new shiny thing that everyone is talking about, think like crypto, than women would actually want to do. So, plus women are less active traders. And you've probably heard the phrase buy and hold. And it's not market timing. It's time in the market. And we've talked about it in the past few shows or whatnot. And frequent trading often results in lower performance. So women seem to be less impulsive, which works in their favor.
That makes sense. You know, this is starting to sound like a version of why don't men ever ask for directions?
That's true. I know. Why don't they?
Confidence. Comes down to the confidence.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah.
But women do better because they tend to ask for directions, right?
Yeah. Would you pull over and get directions? No, I got it.
We're going to take the scenic route today.
Yeah. Oh, I knew where I was going. Think about all these factors taken together. If you get women earning less money during their working life, both because of the wage gap and because they're more likely to take breaks, women living longer than men, and women less likely to invest. So all these unique retirement concerns add up to one thing. Women, both single and married, need to consider their retirement income strategy even more so.
So how should they do that?
Well, Mark, that's exactly what we're going to talk about after the break. And remember, if you're listening and thinking to yourself, I should really do something about this, or I should make sure that my spouse is protected if I die first, you know, like the old saying, when I get around to it. I remember my parents bought my brother around to it. It was like a wooden coin and it said, now at last, now you can do it. Now you've got around to it. So maybe you can get one of those and get around to it. But anyway, if you're looking for some help and some guidance, you can visit my website, theinvestmentexecutives.org, for more information, or you can always call my office, 855-625-3736.
And that's going to do it for segment one. We'll be right back after this.
Welcome back to the Main Money Show. My name's Craig Dixon from Investment Executives Capital Advisory Group. If you'd like more information about what you hear during the show, give me a call at 855-625-3736 or visit us online at theinvestmentexecutives.org.
Well, Craig, you've given me a lot to think about, and I think I'll start having my wife do all of our investing from now on.
I know you're joking. But you raise a good point, my friend, and it's relevant to the discussion of how women can begin to consider their unique retirement needs. Women, again, married or single, should be part of the retirement discussion. And I tell you, a lot of times I get people that come into my office separately, you know what I mean, couples. I think they should focus on doing that together and planning together. And I get that couples often tend to divide and conquer when it comes to who does what, but this is too important a topic to delegate just to one person. It should be a concerted effort by both parties.
Okay, so what should women do?
There are several things. I just read an annuity.org article, Women in Retirement, How to Take the Reins, that I thought had some great advice for women. And the first thing, empower yourself with education. In general, women have a lower level of financial literacy than men, but that's super easy to change, especially in today's world. Obviously, tons of books, you know, browsing the website, you're on your phone, you can click through a ton of stuff, do a little reading here and there, podcasts, you name it, and they can help you up your financial knowledge, if you will. And to be clear, I'm not suggesting you buy products online or anything like that. I'm just talking about learning more about finances because we all know knowledge is power. And then the second thing is participate in a retirement plan. Many people have a retirement plan offered through work, but even if you don't, you can open a regular IRA or even a Roth IRA if you qualify. And for a traditional IRA, a retirement account, you put money in pre-tax, so it also reduces your taxable income. Then the money grows tax-free until you withdraw it after age 59 and a half. And of course, that's just an overview of how that works. I can give you more information if you contact me at 855-625-3736.
Okay, but what if you're already in your 50s or 60s? Isn't that too late to start?
You're out of luck, Mark.
I knew it.
No, you're good. You're good. Obviously, it's better to start earlier, but today is obviously better than tomorrow. And there are things we can do to help you get caught up. You also can contribute more money to a retirement account once you're over age 50, and the IRS calls this the catch-up contributions. Third thing, make retirement planning a priority. I get it. And this happens to, I'd say, everybody, obviously, because life is busy. And women in particular tend to delay finances, you know, and financial moves due to a lack of knowledge or fear. Plus, it's possible that not everyone finds finances as interesting and as fun as I do when we talk about death, divorce, and what else?
I mean, who doesn't enjoy that?
Seriously. It is important, and it is fun to me. The investing part definitely is a big part of my life, and spending a ton of time. Obviously, at work, sometimes more than I should, but I like helping people out and trying to get them to move forward in their retirement. And I think women can sit down and make those decisions and get started. And like I said, today is better than tomorrow.
And what's that old saying? A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
I just want all my clients, women and men, to avoid these common retirement regrets, also cited in the same annuity.org article. Regret number one. Not being involved in the retirement planning process with a spouse or a partner. And many women let their partner take charge of this, but it's a huge mistake to not be involved in the process. You need to know what's going on, obviously, in case something happens and you need to take over the reins entirely. And regret number two, not asking questions or working with a professional. Many women say they feel intimidated by the topic and a financial professional, so they kind of just stay away from it. But don't be. Remember, the financial professional works for you. And they definitely can guide you in a better direction. And then waiting to save until debt is completely paid off, that shouldn't be a regret. Just get things going. Like Mark said, you know, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. So, of course, paying off debt's important, but growing your retirement savings is important also. So doing both things at once is often a good approach.
Got it. Participate in the process, work with a financial services professional, and ask questions, and don't wait until debt is paid off before you start saving for retirement. Using myself as an example, one of the things I like best about working with a financial services pro is that they tell me what I need to hear, not what I want to hear. What's next in this women-focused show, Craig?
Well, I wanted to hit on that want to hear, need to hear thing, and that's tough, and I've had clients that struggle through that. And sometimes it's like it might be an ego thing or whatnot, but if you can get over that hurdle and just put yourself in a position to listen and learn, I think that you then become a team, so it doesn't feel like somebody's just making you do every move. Obviously, my clients have suggestions, and we take into account everything that's talked about, so you know, it's part of the process. But as promised, next up is aimed at what couples can do to make sure that the woman is protected if the man dies first, since statistically speaking, Mark, you will die first.
Oh, I know. If all goes according to plan. Did I mention how cheery that topic is?
Yeah, I know. You did several times. Thank you. But it's important. So, you know, like, I think we just got to stick with it and push through it and push through that idea. But next, let's address taking care of the surviving spouse.
Yeah, the surviving spouse could be a male or female, but statistically speaking, it's likely to be a woman.
Yeah, do you have to emphasize that again?
I think it's worth mentioning again.
Several more times. You think we'll hit on that a few more times? Yeah, women live on average, like at the top of the show, about 6 years longer than men. And we've already talked about that and what that means in terms of retirement income. Women's money needs to last longer, and they're more likely to have significant health care or long-term care costs later in life. So what can be done to plan for those possibilities? There are several things, and we're going to start with what is the foundation of retirement income for many, many people, and that is Social Security. So I'm going to address a situation I see quite often where the man has earned more money during a marriage, therefore qualifies for a larger Social Security benefit. And we've already talked about how women tend to earn less during their working years, both because of the wage gap that we discussed and because they are more likely to have taken breaks in their career for childcare or for elderly parents or whatnot. And this is going to be more of an overview. So if you want details, please contact me and make an appointment. You can call 855-625-3736. But first, you may know that depending upon the specific circumstances, a spouse with lower lifetime earnings can choose to forgo their own Social Security and instead apply to get their benefits through their higher earning spouse's Social Security. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
All right.
I do now.
There you go.
And that is going to do it for segment two. We'll be back after this.
Welcome back to the Main Money Show. My name is Craig Dixon from Investment Executives Capital Advisory Group. If you'd like more information about what we hear during the show, give us a call at 855-625-3736, or as always, visit us online at theinvestmentexecutives.org.
So let's pick up where we left off. At the close of last segment, you said that a spouse with less lifetime earnings may be able to claim Social Security through their higher earning spouse. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So let's say that the higher earning spouse, in this case, we'll call him Mark, gets a social. Is that pretty?
That's good.
Apropos. Let's say Mark gets a Social Security benefit of $2,000 per month. His wife Lisa has a benefit of only $700 a month. Lisa has the option to claim Social Security based on Mark's work history instead of her own. But there is a catch. The most Lisa can get is half of Mark's primary insurance amount. That's the amount Mark will get if he works until his full retirement age. If Lisa or Mark retires early, that amount is reduced. So the most that Lisa could get is $1,000 per month.
All right. I'm with you so far.
Okay. So now we're going to talk about you dying. So if Mark dies first, then Lisa...
Why are you smiling when you say that?
I don't know. I just love talking about you dying. Oh, shoot. Gives me such joy. But then I wouldn't have a co-host. So if Mark dies first, Lisa gets whatever Mark was getting. So in this case, she will get $2,000 a month after he dies, but she doesn't get the $700 anymore that she had. Now, here's where we can build in some extra protection for Lisa. Let's say that the $2,000 is Mark's full retirement benefit. By that, I mean that Mark retired at his full retirement age of 67 and started getting his Social Security. What would have happened if Mark then retired early?
I say he would have gotten less than $2,000 a month.
Ding, 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 ding. What do we have? Exactly right. If he retired at 62, which is the earliest possible age to get Social Security, and began claiming Social Security, he would have only received $1,400 a month, which means that after Mark dies, the most Lisa can get is $1,400 a month. And that's a pretty significant drop. Would you agree?
I would agree. And now I have some explaining to do to my wife about this Lisa character.
Well, there you go. But guess what happens if Mark waits to get his Social Security until he's 70?
I'm going to say it goes up.
Ding, 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 ding. Right again. If this was a game show, you'd be killing it. It goes up. If he waits until 70, that $2,000 turns into $2,480.
So you're saying that if I wait until age 70 to get the Social Security benefit, then Lisa, my estranged wife.
Yes.
This must be after I moved to Utah.
Correct.
She will also get that higher benefit if I die first.
That's right again. So if you think it's likely that the lower earning spouse will outlive the higher earning spouse, delaying your Social Security benefit is one way to maintain a higher level of income for that surviving spouse.
All right. That is great information.
That is good information.
But even though income is obviously a huge thing for the surviving spouse, what about other things? Like, what else should Lisa and I do to prepare?
That's a good question. So I found an AARP article, 10 Tips to Help Protect Your Spouse. And that lists other things that couples should do in advance to help put the surviving spouse in a position of power. And here's their 10 tips for what couples should do in advance of death. So you ready for this?
I'm ready.
It's 10 of these babies. Number one, gather up financial papers. Lots of people have things stuffed into drawers or in different files or maybe in a safe deposit box. No judgment, but it's a good idea to get those things organized and all in one spot. As an aside, we offer our clients access to what we call the Generational Vault, which is a secure online storage vault where you can save your financial documents, account values, even family keepsakes or videos or whatnot. And this is complimentary to our clients, and it's a great way to organize things we're talking about. And, you know, if you want somebody to know where that information is should you pass away, it's one username and password away, right? You know, they don't have to find everything. It's all in one spot. Number two, make a must-call list. Include contact information for people like your accountant, your lawyer, or other financial professionals that need to be called after your death. Number three, share passwords. I just talked about that. You can use that. Just have one that kind of encompasses everything. Keep a master list. Keep that in your generational vault of all your passwords so that your spouse has access to these accounts. Or if you pass together, it might be a child or somebody else that you've kind of put in place to manage that stuff. Number four is update beneficiaries. This one is important. I can't stress this enough. And we've all heard the horror stories about the ex-spouse who's still named on a life insurance beneficiary. So check these and make sure they're obviously up to date. Number five is check credit cards. Do you have joint accounts? If so, then the surviving spouse will be responsible for charges on the account. If not, then the surviving spouse won't be responsible for the debt, but also will not be able to use the account. So kind of weigh the pluses and minuses there. Number six, set up advanced directives. You both need healthcare powers of attorney to designate the person you want to make medical decisions on your behalf if you're incapacitated. You also need a living will that spells out what measures you want the doctor to take to prolong your life. Number seven, designate a money person. Each of you will need a financial power of attorney so you can name a trusted person to make money decisions for you if you're unable to do so. Number eight, review wills and trusts, or get one if you don't have one. I have a lot of clients who have waited in the past. They're starting to get more on board with this and starting to realize that that's an important piece of the financial planning puzzle. You want to look at that every few years or when there's a significant change in your life, such as sizable increase or decrease in your finances. If you don't have a will, get one. It's super important. I've seen many times where families didn't have one and it's a disaster. Number nine, discuss funeral plans. Not something you want to do, Mark, but should be on the top of the list. And it can save you thousands of dollars by letting the surviving spouse, who may need the money, know it's okay not to choose the most expensive funeral. Number 10, learn how bills are paid. Keep a list of how bills are paid so the survivor doesn't miss a payment or overdraw an account. And that can be important on things like life insurance and whatnot for the survivors of that surviving spouse.
Those all seem like common sense things, but I'm ashamed to admit there are several that I haven't done yet.
Ashamed?
Yeah.
It's okay.
No, it's not okay.
We'll get you there.
I should be better than that.
We'll get you there. You're not alone. You know, it's easy to put off these types of things, but it's important to do them, and you just got to try to prioritize. That's all.
I'm going to go through this list with my spouse this weekend.
If you have questions or concerns about how much you need for retirement, Social Security, or your financial strategy, visit my website, theinvestmentexecutives.org, or again, call my office, 855-625-3736 to discuss how my team might be able to help. It's our goal to help prepare you and your spouse for retirement and for a retirement you've worked so hard for.
And that's going to do it for another episode of The Main Money Show with Craig Dixon of the Investment Executives Capital Advisory Group and me, your co-host, Mark Turcotte. Join us again next week for another exciting episode of The Main Money Show.
All matters discussed during the show are for informational purposes only. Opinions expressed are solely those of Investment Executives Capital Advisory Group and staff. All topics covered are believed to be from reliable sources. However, Investment Executives Capital Advisory Group makes no representations as to their accuracy or completeness. Securities and investment advisory services offered through Gradient Securities, LLC. Member FINRA SIPC. Gradient Securities, LLC. An SEC-registered investment advisor. Offers investment advisory services under the DBA of Gradient Wealth Management. Gradient Securities, LLC and its advisors do not render tax, legal, or accounting advice. Insurance products and services are offered through Investment Executives, Inc. Investment Executives Capital Advisory Group and Investment Executives, Inc. are not affiliated with Gradient Securities, LLC and are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any government agency.